don't know if I'm being foolish. Don't know if I'm being wise. But it's something that I must believe in. And it's there when I look in your eyes. Love is in the air.
Hello and welcome to the football family for what is a week for the lovers. Never mind St. Valentine's Day, it's just 5 days to the start of the League of Ireland season. We had a small teaser as Shamrock Rovers beat St. Patrick's Athletic 3-1 in the President's Cup on Friday. But the real stuff will soon be underway. Even the FAI have cleared the decks. Jonathan Hill telling delegates at this weekend, well, last weekend's EGM, that the new men's manager will not be appointed this week. I am your host, David Snaid, and joining me is former League of Ireland boss Shane Keegan and the 42's Gavin Cooney. Good morning, lads.
What's the crack?
How are you, David?
I'm very well. Now, you didn't hear it, but the music that we're planning on having there is All You Need Is Love.
Good tune, very good tune.
What do you love about this week, the build up, Shane? It's going to be different for you now because your head's not going to be melted with actual preparations for a match. But what is it about this time?
When you actually initially asked the question there, I didn't know whether you were referring to the build up to the League of Ireland or to Valentine's Day. I didn't know which was taking priority there.
Well, listen, if you want to give away some secrets, you're more than welcome to.
I have a very, very straightforward approach to this, David. I say to her, Roisin, tell me exactly what you want me to do on Valentine's Day, and that is what I will do. And then there's just no grey areas, no crossed wires. I deliver on what I'm told to do, and I can't overachieve or underachieve. I just deliver.
But Shane, something that takes more than it gives and leaves you poorer off at the end of it, is that Valentine's Day or is that League of Ireland management?
Both in equal measure. to come to your actual question. Yeah, it is a different week. Like I think I was saying to you there the last day, I think it's something like 12, is it 12? No, I think I worked out eight of the last 10 seasons or something like that. I have either been a manager heading into the start of a new League of Ireland season or some sort of a role within the League of Ireland heading into it. So it has been a very, very relaxed, trying to keep an eye on everything, trying to get up to scratch with everything. Is it just me or is it like, maybe it's because I am out of the immediate loop that there just seems to be more and more players that I've never heard of in the league this year. Therefore, I'm trying to get up to scratch on who are they. Like, it's some guessing game trying to figure out who's going to be good, who's not going to be good this year. For me, at the moment anyway, I think it's definitely going to take a few weeks. That's me getting my early excuses in for making shit predictions when we come to that part. But it's definitely going to take a few weeks to wrap your head around where everybody's at, I think, because there's just such a level of unknown to it.
No, I think you're right, dead right. Like, obviously, a number of clubs have brought in people from outside the league. Like, Dundalk have essentially brought in half of Scotland. You know, the Highlands. That's going to be interesting. Obviously, Bowles have a new striker as well. They brought in a couple of defenders too as well. Even Pats. The guy was at the President's Cup on Friday. Like, Pats had five new signings starting. Then they announced another signing on Saturday. The lad, whose name I'm already after just forgetting, but who in fairness, he seems to have a decent pedigree. Was at City for 10 years. Went to Barnes. He played 70 games in the Championship. Was obviously over in Turkey. But oh no, it does. You're right though. There's definitely a sense of it's going to take a little time to actually feel different teams out and where they're at and just how they've actually adjusted. You know, over the winter.
I would say probably the only couple of teams I feel anyway kind of adequately prepared to talk about are Galway and Waterford, obviously, because I spent last season in the same division as the two of them. And then I think I'm fairly well versed in terms of talking about Derry, considering that I think there's a hell of a chance that the starting midfield and forwards for Derry will all have been Dundalk players when I was at Dundalk. So, yeah. Like, it's ridiculous. You're looking at Michael Duffy and Dan Kelly on the two wings, Cameron Dunigan, Patrick McElhenney and Will Patching midfield, and Pat Hoopin up front. Every single one of them played for Dundalk when I was there.
And that seems to have been even with Derry for Rory Higgins, one of his kind of things over the winter, where he wasn't one for making, like, in a huge influx of signings. He only signed the two players and they were both, you've mentioned them there, Daniel Kelly and Pat Hoopin, you know. It seems to be a case of, and that's even what you look at Rovers as well. One of the things that stood out Like, obviously, they brought in Darragh Burns on loan, but it's still very much as you were from last year. It's just that kind of sense of just, I don't know, adding a little bit and keeping it ticking over, and just that sense of solidity. Where are you at, Gav? How are you feeling?
I'm excited, yeah. Always love this week, David, because there's no matches been played yet, so none of my takes have been exposed as shit as they usually are, so I always like this week. Yeah, and like exactly like you said, it's so hard to know, it's so hard to predict how a lot of teams will go. Maybe Shelburne a little bit, but definitely with Dundalk and Bohemians, it's just such a leap into the unknown with them. But I think there's fewer, and sorry, with Pats as well, I think there's fewer question marks about Rovers. I think... is this squad the best on paper that they've had going into the start of the season in this run of five in a row? Like, it potentially is, like, because they've kept, they've pretty much kept the team from last year together. Obviously, Finn and Manus have left, which, you know, we'll see how if that affects them. And then they've kind of, you know, what they've done well, Rovers, over the last few years is if players have left, they've kind of got them back. I mean, that Aaron McInniff was legitimately, maybe arguably, the league's best midfielder in the season before he went to Scotland. So he's back. It might take him a little bit of time to get back up to speed and so forth. But there's fewer question marks about Rovers, I think, than ever before. I think they're deservedly favourites for the league. And the only real question mark about Derry, is it a question mark? I think it's a case of now or never now for that squad.
Do you think so already?
Yeah, I think so. Well, maybe it is for Rory Higgins. I think, like, you know, he's kind of... At the league launch last week, you know, Hooban and Kelly, there's a real kind of final piece of the jigsaw vibe to those signings. And I think that, you know, so many other squads have been disrupted by just the amount of business that they've had to do. I think Derry should benefit from that level of continuity all the way back to Dundalk, as you say, Shane. But I just feel like, you know, yes, last season was such a disappointment from them in the sense that Rovers were there to be... weren't there for the taking, but they were vulnerable. And Stephen Bradley has even since acknowledged that after the season. So I think last season was a real missed opportunity for them. I think this season is that they're going to have to at least push them properly close.
But that's an interesting point, Gav, right? And I wonder, Shane, as a manager or as a coach, have you ever felt that yourself going into a season where you're thinking, right, you know what? I've brought in or I've done what I needed to do to maybe get to a next level and push on and achieve what you need to achieve, and thinking if I can't do it now, this could be tough to actually do it. Does that make sense? In the sense of like what Gav was there now or never for this group, but you know what I mean? Where like he's obviously targeted and wanted to get that kind of focal point as a striker. He obviously saw out wide in the right as well to have that area sorted, and they've done that. But as a manager or a coach, have you ever had that feeling yourself where you're like, you know what? I've got pretty much everything where it needs to be. We need to deliver here.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably two different ways in which you can come into a season with that approach. I think there's the one where the expectation is aligns with your own gut feeling that, yeah, we can deliver on expectation. And that's probably where Rory's at the moment. I think, like, I agree with Gav completely. Like, you know, the simple fact is that Derry to go and try and win the title last season, they needed Rovers to be, you know, fairly under par because they had been outstanding in the previous years. And Rovers were fairly under par, and yet Derry never really got anywhere close. So that had to be a big, big disappointment. And I don't think a season like that I don't think Rory can probably get away with another season like that, to be honest with you. I think it's a different story if Derry step up and improve dramatically, but unfortunately for them, Rovers get back to the Rovers of previous seasons, you know, but Derry pushed them to the last couple of games and Rovers win the league title that the two of them hotly contested. You know, I'm not saying that Rory has to win the league, but I think they have to make more of a fist of it. And, you know, I think really the only reasonable excuse is that Rovers were just better again and they couldn't be reeled in. They definitely wouldn't get away with another season of Rovers been under par, but Derry failing to capitalise. But I do think... I do think it can't be underestimated how much of a difference that Hooban can make. I mean, you talk about being a final piece of a jigsaw. I think he you know, I thought I was impressed with Derry a lot last year. And look, a combination of, you know, McGonagall kind of not being able to replicate the form from the previous season, Colm Whelan basically being a write-off for the whole season with injury. It was just so blatantly obvious that they were just missing an out-and-out nine. And that was, in my opinion, what was holding, not the only thing holding them back. They needed to improve in certain other areas as well. But it was, without a doubt, the main aspect holding them back. They've now gone and got that nine. They've got the best nine we've had in the league in the last, you know, 10 years, maybe Sean Maguire with the exception. But they've got that piece. So I could completely understand why Rory should be feeling positive and confident. The only caveat thrown in there is he also has to be looking over at what Rovers have done and gone, Jesus, they do look good.
You used the words positive and confident, and rather than just focusing maybe specifically on, say, the title race, we've already gotten into that there a little bit there, but that seems to be the general vibe, Gav. You were at the league launch of where we are at the league, like, you know what I mean, in terms of normally we're going in and there's some kind of dooms scenario, you know what I mean, in terms of where the league is at. It's almost like it's always a case of, you know, assessing where things are at, and it's like, you know, where can it go, where can it, how can it improve, what's actually going to happen. And that, don't get me wrong, some of those questions are still there, but it's from a base of, well, we're reaching the limit of where they can go with attendances already, which seems absolutely bizarre. And obviously the prize money and all has gone up. But what was your own sense being out there at Vicar Street last week for that, in terms of speaking to it? Because sometimes players and managers will use it as a chance to get stuff off their chest about little, like, I don't know, complaints that they might have. But how was it for you out there?
Yeah, it was grand. I mean, no one did too much complaining to me. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. No, like, I mean, the vibe is generally excited. You know, I always love these couple of weeks building up to the start of the new season. And the whole trajectory around the league is still real positive. You know, I think we've talked about this at length now, but it's still true. It is amazing that, you know, Bows and Pats and other teams are turning people away from matches, which is kind of remarkable and kind of depressing in one sense that, you know, we're going to bump against the kind of glass ceiling now imposed by the ramshackle state of most of the facilities around the country. Obviously, the new stand being open in Tala is great, and it looks like, okay, I wasn't there on Friday, but it even looks so great on TV. Like, obviously, they didn't, I think they had restricted ticket sales in that stand on Friday, but, you know, when they start selling it out, it'll look so great in television. So, yeah, look, I mean, the whole thing is so positive. The crowds are really good. I think there's a number of reasons for it. One of them is the country's appetite to go to live sport. I don't think that's unique in football or League of Ireland football, to be honest, but they've definitely benefited from it. Other things as well, it's just that, you know, clubs have kind of built an identity with their supporter base, largely by themselves, in fairness, but with community work and that kind of thing that we've chronicled over the years and is so valuable on a number of levels. And to steal one of your points, David, I think a crucial point in all of it is the national underage leagues. You know, it makes young players are now involved and wearing the jerseys of League of Ireland squads from under 13, under 15, etc. So that, to make a blindingly obvious point, that means they and their family will go to League of Ireland matches, which means obviously that swells the crowd. But also, like, kids are growing up now realising that League of Ireland clubs are part of the pathway to professional football. Like, I know we always lament the, you know, kids are like, what's on TV? There's not enough League of Ireland on TV and in the media. They just see Premier League and Champions League and so forth. But, you know, you can see, like, this generation now, rather than previous generations, can see that there is a link in the chain there between League of Ireland sites, whereas previously it wasn't there. Like, you know, the League of Ireland was primarily for those who went at 16 from their schoolboy club to England, and then when they found it too hard, or, you know, injuries or bad luck impacted them, they came back to play for League of Ireland squad. So I think that's all part of it. I think the crowds at the end of the season will be up on last year, just because UCD aren't there and Galway and Waterford are. But also you have to temper it. You know, it's just like, okay, this is, the growth here is amazing, but there's not actually a whole lot of room for further growth until we start improving the facilities.
But even again, like, it's a point that we've all made on this podcast, but even there, you've laid it out, it's so true, where it's like, on the lifeline of a footballer, the League of Ireland has now changed. It's not, as you say, maybe something that could be seen, Shane, maybe at the back end or at a point where it's And we've all had, we all know the players where they come back and stuff. As Gav says, it's an earlier pathway, and there's no getting away from it. You mentioned there about, say, Galway and Waterford, and we'll speak about them in a bit. But I was over in Galway last week, and it was something that John Caulfield even said, and that's something that he's noticed over the last, even in the change from when he was coming in as manager of Cork City in 2014. Just the difference in the age profile that's happened of people at matches, and it just brings a different energy. There's no getting away from that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like, if you play it out, like, the simple fact here is that in 10, what am I right in saying, roughly in 10 years' time, pretty much every player in the Irish international soccer team will have played League of Ireland football between the ages of 16 and 18. Like, where else are they going to have played their football between the ages of 16 and 18? You'll get the few that'll take off to Europe that bit sooner, I suppose. But by and large, the vast, vast majority of them are going to have played in the League of Ireland between the ages of 16 and 18. So it's a brilliant reason for... It's one of the many reasons, but for me, that's a brilliant reason just in itself in terms of people getting up and getting out to games. Like, you want to be sitting in the Aviva in 10 years' time, hopefully watching an improved Irish side by then, and competing in international tournaments, and you want to be able to say, Jesus, you know what, I remember when he did such and such, and I remember when, you know, I was at the game one night and he did blah 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 when he was only just 16, just 17, whatever. Like, that's, for me, that's one of the game changers, as you say. It the League of Ireland is now properly well embedded into the player pathway. And yeah, like, a lot of this is kind of a snowball effect as well, in that, you know, it started to become a little bit more trendy to get to League of Ireland games. That means there's a little bit more talk. To be fair, I think the media has always kind of nearly given it a bigger slice than it should get in terms of coverage, if we're honest about it. And I think that's finally starting to pay off. But the big thing is that because it's slowly starting to build, that means more people are talking about it. And now, rather than being the weirdo who goes to the League of Ireland on a Friday night, you're kind of, if in the conversation on a Monday back in the workplace, you're kind of out of the loop if you don't have something to say in terms of what happened in the League of Ireland on a Monday. And that's a brilliant transformation.
Yeah, you know, Jonathan Goodbye was right. It's not grim. You know?
Do you remember that?
Oh, stuff.
It's just, we still don't have scores being displayed on bus stops. You know, that's, no. I have to wonder, what the hell are the FAI playing on?
Well, there is the Bowes bus stop. Bowes still have...
it's true.
And they have the minibus as well, the little small one for the football, for the ball bringing on. But like, with that though, just to finish on this part, because there is that positivity, but then also what comes with it when more people come is more of a spotlight. And it's like, we've already seen it where clubs have even said about, like, you've mentioned it there, Gav, about like people not being able to get tickets eventually. And there was I saw Gavin Comiskey had a big thing on in the Irish Times over the weekend about the facilities and the stadiums. And like, I know obviously there's the FAI's infrastructure plan, and we'll chat a little bit at the end, obviously Mark Cannon with the player pathway and stuff. But like, and again, I'm going back, it still comes back down to the facilities. I think this wave is only going to last for so long, and then eventually it's going to crash, because unless there's something properly put in place to actually, I don't know, like, just not appease it, but just actually being able to capitalise on it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. We need two things. In my opinion, we need two things to happen to capitalize on it. One is 100% investment in facilities that, you know, as people start to come, we give them a reason to stay coming in terms of the pitch, the toilets, all of those kinds of things, the stands, all of that. And then the other thing is, like, people aren't just going to stay coming to shit games every week. Like, the league needs to, you know, the league needs to deliver. I still think last season, you know, we had a massive upturn in crowds last season, despite the fact that I thought it was a poorish standard League of Ireland Premier Division. Right. You can only get away with that for so long. Like, if people turn up to shit games every week, they won't be long about changing their mind, and they'll go back into the comfort of their home on a Friday night. So we need the league to get back and deliver, you know, a really good title race. I know we're going to touch on it probably as we go along. I think the bottom end of the table is going to be absolutely fascinating this year. But we also need stars. We need stars, David. Like, you do very, very well to like, who was the standout three players in the League of Ireland last year? You know, you do very, very well to throw out a few names who had exceptional seasons. We need, in my opinion, you know, every club needs a star. We need these names that we can just turn to, people who become household names, League of Ireland players who are household names. And in that sense, I'd love to see a couple of fellas really step up and light it up. I'd love to see, you know, even though it's probably very doubtful, I'd love to see five players who can realistically hit 20 goals this season. I want to see Jack Byrne back being Jack Byrne. I want to see Jake Mulroney deliver and become the player that we thought he was going to be last year and didn't quite fully deliver on. And then, of course, we want the superstar young fellas coming through to deliver. They were probably the one cohort who probably did deliver to a certain extent last year. The young fellas that we know are going to go on and be stars, they probably delivered more than the rest, to be fair to them.
A couple, I wonder though, when you make that point, say, about, say, last year and the standard, and you're right in terms of, and even Gab made the point earlier, even Stephen Bradley admitted that last season should have been the year that someone capitalised on Rovers stuttering. But talking about stars, but if you're talking about where the league is going and age profile, and Gab, you've written a lot about this in terms of where the league is at compared to other European countries. But naturally, if there's a lot of young lads coming through and emerging at different clubs, you're going to imagine that's going to bring an element of inconsistency throughout. So you'll have those little moments where they will maybe produce moments of magic and you see where they're at. But then on the other side of it, because they are so young and they're still learning the game, they're going to maybe have that period in seasons where they'll dip. You know, you've seen we're probably the exception to the rule, although we had a couple of moments where he came through, was maybe Sam Curtis. That's probably the reason why he got a move to a Premier League club, because he was someone who seemed at a very, very young age, even at 16, 17, to be able to have that consistency. And then you're also finding not just even playing the game, but physically, do you know what I mean? In terms of adapting from playing those underage leagues and having the talent, like Stephen Bradley referenced it with Conan Noonan, like the most naturally gifted player you'll see, taking corners off both feet, but still has, like, I know he's had issues with COVID and he's been seeing the psychologist at Rovers as well. But that's going to be another element too, where players are, you might have those sporadic moments, especially with the young lads, but it's going to be hard to maintain that.
Yeah, it's a really good point that with the league's kind of, it's got, you know, its profile of player is so young now. Like, I mean, it's by far one of the youngest top divisions across Europe. Now, those stats have been duped a little bit, obviously, by UCD, but it's still, you know, it's still a young man's league, you know, because that kind of you would consider peak age footballers, there's not as many around, really, because A, obviously, they can be, you know, pretty expensive wages-wise in a time when teams are, particularly in Dublin, are a little bit pressed because it's so hard to find anywhere for them to live. You know, I mean, that's one of the major issues. And also because post-Brexit, it's a lot easier for that age group to move to England than previously, just because there's less competition for places, because UK clubs need to get work permits for anyone else inside the EU and further afield. So that's one of the reasons, I think, why the league is younger. And that's a great point as regards inconsistency. And also that the fact that there is that gap of player, you know, that Irish guys going over to UK. Some, now in fairness, I'm not going to name names because it's not fair, but like there are some people who go over to the UK after the age of 18, to be honest, they're not really ready for it, or not good enough, to be quite honest, but are there to, you know, fill out places in academies or on reserve teams. So basically to give other guys, their more talented guys, to make sure that there's guys around them so they can train and play games to reach their potential. And as a result, that's leaving a gap that needs to be filled in the League of Ireland. And we can see it with recruitment from the UK and specifically with what Bohemians lately from Eastern Europe, you know. So I mean that certainly in the early parts of the season, that will also give you a little bit of inconsistency as well, just because these guys not necessarily used to the league, the rhythm of the league, its style and some of the facilities in which they have to deal with.
Right, let's change the tact with the age profile. Shane Keegan, not that you're old, but John Caulfield discussed he's going to be the oldest manager in the League of Ireland with the oldest assistant, I'm guessing, as well, with Ollie Horgan. I must say, when I was up there with obviously the piece was up on the site on Sunday for those who did read it, it was great crack. Like, I'll be honest, I thought it was going to be a little bit different. I wasn't expecting it to be as a bit of fun. I kind of had something different in me head for how And I said this to John, for how a John Caulfield team and an Ollie Horgan team, how he would go about things. But like getting to watch the training session and how it was just fantastic to watch it.
Yeah, John has a real kind of mischievous side to him, I suppose, probably the best way I put it.
Oh, stop the noise, man. There was a great moment and I didn't include it in the piece because Ollie didn't want, he wasn't on the record for it, but there was a great moment in the dressing room when we were chatting in the dressing room, when Ollie came in to start getting changed for training to use the toilet while the interview was going on and all, and just two lads together, it was just genuinely, it was fucking brilliant. It really was. It was just genuinely, you can understand why some players absolutely love them.
Yeah. No, 100%. Look, he is that sort who, he'd make you want to go to war for him, all right. That's for sure. And then throw in Ollie beside that. Look, I've said before, Ollie is probably the manager that I would know best in the League of Ireland. We both came into it at a very, very similar time. We've both been at kind of similar levels a lot of the time, I suppose. And, I suppose I took a kind of a backseat role at Dundalk, and the way he's taken somewhat of a backseat role at, although I don't know how backseat Ollie can ever be. But he is something else. Tragically lost his brother there in the last month. I don't know whether he chatted on that at all, but yeah, a really, really sad story. His brother would have been heavily, heavily involved in soccer in Galway, and Mary Aaron Moore, a man. I would have known very well, Martin. But no, look, Ollie, he just doesn't give a shite, does he? He's absolutely his own man. Absolutely his own man. And I would absolutely fully see how that would be a brilliant place to be involved with for a player for the coming season. And it's gas. I think certainly if you look at kind of bookmakers and that, Galway aren't really, and normally a team coming up is maybe an underdog to stay up. Looking at the odds this week, Galway are absolutely nowhere near that. They're kind of nearly fifth. I think they're fifth in the betting to actually win the bloody thing. And yet you can be absolutely assured those two men will have built an unbelievable siege mentality of everybody's writing them off and nobody's giving them a chance and everybody expects them to go straight back down.
I was half expecting to be some sort of trap when I was allowed to go up there, saying that he's only up here to kind of write about how he's going to be going straight down or something. it was just great to have, first of all, to have that kind of level of access, even just to go up and watch training and see obviously there's John, who basically just oversaw everything. He wouldn't have been kind of referencing the intro. We had one point where he got involved and hit a volley over the bar and he got a bit of slagging, but it was very much, say, the first team coach there, Chris Colopy
was at Treaty when I was at Treaty.
So he would have done a lot at the start of that, and he was again just very sharp, very, the players, you could just tell it was there was no messing there, it was very good. Looking at it from as someone who at that level or whatever, I was very impressed by that. And then you see Ollie taking the game and doing the work and little things where, they have those moments, and I referenced it in the piece where he's roaring at lads, but he's roaring them with a purpose. It wasn't eating the head off lads for the sake of it. And then there was a moment where he got played around from under the press and he broke it down and stopped everyone where they were and went through it and said, this is going to happen a minimum of 3 times in a game. And telling the lads, and you saw it. When you see it, and you saw the whole picture, and he was tell the lads where you needed to be, what needed to happen to at least, if when this does happen, to limit the damage. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And it's just it was just how he kind of got that message across very, very clearly. And lads who were on the pitch and where they were, if you can't understand that message he's given straight away, and you can, it was so simple how he got it across. Yeah. Where people were on the pitch and the distance and all. Genuinely, for someone just looking at it, who obviously would be clueless to where lads should be probably a lot of time on the pitch at that point, it was very interesting to see just exactly. It was almost like he was waiting for that moment in the session for it to happen so he could pinpoint exactly what lads needed to do.
Yeah, well, two things that strike me about that. Firstly, Ollie is a fantastic reader of the game. No doubt, he's got a real, real intelligence about how he reads the game. And the second thing there is, in terms of the coaching point, Ollie's a teacher. Ollie must be a teacher 30 bloody years now. That has to help. In my opinion, that has to help. You know, being able to explain concepts to people in, you know, with no airs and graces about you in very, very plain terms, you know, that's probably what he's doing in secondary school every day. So it is. So that, I think, is the fact that he will be dealing with kind of teenagers and all that, because, you know, it's like the John Giles one. I went to the UK at 16 years of age, and 20 years later, I came back as a 16-year-old. You know, footballers are kind of teenagers for their whole lives. So the fact that Ollie is used to dealing with them on a daily basis, I think, sets him up well to communicate with them on a training ground.
What stood out as well from just being in that environment, and again, I said this to John, was like, not many managers would do what he did by bringing in someone like Ollie at that point of Galway, where, like, when it started that season, where, like, a couple of years where he hadn't got promoted, the pressure was on, don't get me wrong, unfortunately, they were expected to do it. Like, the easiest thing would be to have a kind of almost like an inexperienced kind of background staff or staff who were coming up. So he's like the main man. Like, and he said it, he goes, football is full of suspicious people like that who don't want to be seen to need that help. But he's like, you have to be able to say, well, who can I bring in to be able to make us better? And like, for him, it says a lot about him as a manager, I think, as well, that that's what he was willing to do.
Yeah, big time. I think probably the only example we'd had of it in League of Ireland terms for me was Keith Long bringing in Trevor Crawley. I'd seen it done in a few other sports, obviously, where Stuart Lancaster had come in at Leinster Rugby. There was a couple of kind of GA examples of it, probably Stephen Rochford up at Donegal, different things like that. But I thought it was, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It takes a real solid character, a man with a lot of kind of conviction in himself, to turn around and say, you know, particularly knowing that, you know, Ollie was going to be no shrieking violet. Like, you know, you're not bringing in a guy who's just going to be happy to stand in the background there and nod and smile and agree with you. Like, I would say some of the private conversations those two have, even though I'd say they go on like a house on fire, I'd say they cut shreds off each other when, you know, if there's a disagreement on what way they should play or who they should start. You know, neither of those two men are used to backing down or giving in easily in terms of their opinion. So I'd say if you could be a fly on the wall for some of the conversations, I'd say it'd be fascinating. But look, there's no doubt it worked incredibly well last year. And like, again, the fact that, let's be honest, John would have had the biggest budget probably in the two previous seasons as well. Maybe, yeah. I'm not 100% sure, was there bigger teams around at the time, but I would think he had near enough the biggest, was certainly a budget that would have probably met to expectations.
Waterford would have had one of that because they were full-time. I say Waterford would have definitely last year.
Yeah. I suppose the point I'm making is in each of the two previous seasons, Galway would have had a budget that would have led to expectation that they would go up. And the fact that they didn't then either time, you know, there was a part of John where he could have said, well, hold on now, if I bring in an Ollie here, even if we do go up, all of a sudden Ollie's going to be the one getting the credit as the missing piece, and it's not going to be me. You know, if there was an insecurity in John, that could have been the way he felt. But as I say, that insecurity certainly isn't there. John's never struck me as a man with too many insecurities. And he made a masterstroke, really, I think, in terms of bringing Ollie on board.
And well, they've come up, obviously, Waterford are up as well, and you've kind of referenced it there, and you mentioned Keith Long. What's your assessment maybe of where they are, or even just what their expectations should be?
Yeah, it's a strange one for Waterford, really, in that, look, I suppose, again, you're always coloured by your own experiences against the team in terms of how you rate them and how you grade them. And I suppose, because we did so well against them in the second half of the season, we beat them in the league, then, you know, we very, very, very nearly managed to beat them in the playoff. I'm looking at them going, well, you know, with the best will in the world to ourselves, we would be a distinctly average side. I'd kind of fear for them a little bit if they weren't able to kind of blow us out of the water. I would have a little bit of a fear for them there. That said, then they've made two signings. Now, again, you know, I have rosy tinted glasses here in that they're two people that I know personally, so therefore I'm hoping to do well. But I do think they've made two really, really astute signings in Pádraig Amond and Ben McCormack. Like, Ben, you know, I know Ben since he was 12, 13. Ben's, the potential there with Ben is absolutely massive. And what I think what he needs is just a manager who's going to say, right, listen, Ben, there's the next half dozen games for you. You're going to start week in, week out, no matter how you're playing over those first six. I'm going to stick with you and give you a chance to really, really nail down your position. And then six games is long enough. If you haven't delivered over six, now you might drop out of sight. But up until now, Ben's career has always been, you know, you are going to have to play absolutely out of your skin to start again next week. If you have a 7.5, possibly even an 8 out of 10, you're probably going to drop back out of sight again next week. And it's very, very hard for a young player to build momentum in a situation like that. So I think he could be a big one. And then it's just, you know, what's going to keep you in the division, or what's going to try and keep you out of the relegation picture? A goal scorer, simple as, a goal scorer. And that's the one thing that Podge has always been. Yeah. You know, if they supply the bullets, he will absolutely put the ball in the back of the net. Now, he's not, and I don't think he's going to be, he's not going to be I'm trying to think of somebody who was, you know, like Ronan Coughlin, I suppose, last year in our division, scored a lot of goals where he assisted himself almost, in that some of the runs he went on, some of the things he did were absolutely outstanding. I don't think Podge at Premier Division level at his age is going to be skipping past three or four fellas and putting the ball in the back net. But what you do know is, you know, if you create a half-decent chance for him, he's going to finish it. And that's, you know, there's not too many that you can say that about. Like, you know, you're probably only looking at maybe five strikers in the division where you're saying, yeah, the vast majority of the time I would expect him to take a half decent chance. So he's a really astute sign as well. But I do think they're going to have it tough enough.
That's interesting. Just briefly, two other things on Waterford. They've also signed Dara Leahy from Dundalk, who I always thought was a very solid player. I'm actually kind of slightly surprised that, I don't know the background to any of that, but I was slightly surprised just to see the move when it was announced. And I think we're all fascinated to see how Romeo Akachukwu gets on. I mean, he's super highly talented teenager at Waterford, seems to be staying there until he's 18, and I don't think he'll go to Fleetwood. I think he might go to the upper echelons of English football. Shane, what's your read on him from having faced Waterford last year, and will the step up be an issue for him at all?
I think Romeo can do really, really well. He's an extremely intelligent for his age, extremely intelligent in terms of his movement. There's a directness that you tend to get with young players where there's no fear. He certainly possesses that. I'll tell you what's going to work in his favour there as well is, like, when we came up against him, I suppose because he had scored the hat-trick the previous week, and because we were an underdog, we were pretty much happy to literally sacrifice our whole midfielder and just tell our whole midfielder literally do a man-marking job on him. Like, at Premier Division level, you know, there's going to be very few teams that are going to give him that level of respect. You know, the teams he's coming up against, they're going to build their own game plan. They're not going to set up a game plan to stop Romeo. And I think that'll suit him down to the ground, because he then will have that bit more freedom to move around and get on the ball. But just, you know, he has the potential to be a super player. On Dara, I'd almost forgot about the Dara one, because that happened quite early, I think, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Dara, when I was at Dundalk, a move fell down literally at the last minute for Dara to move to St Mirren. He was supposed to be heading for Scotland, and it just didn't quite happen for him at the last second, and that's kind of the level that he was at. So I'd agree with you. I was really surprised to see him move kind of to a team like Waterford at the moment, you know.
Was that with Jamie McGrath? Did Jamie McGrath go to St Mirren around the time? Was that
Jamie was at St Mirren. Jamie was already there.
Okay.
Yeah, because Jamie was never at Dundalk when I was at Dundalk. He was already gone. Whereas part of the reason was that I think I was the designated signature on something or other, and I didn't really fully understand the way a deadline worked, if I'm completely honest about it. And I woke up the following morning, I think I said this to you before, that I had like 16 missed calls from Jim McGilton. I just went to bed at 11 o'clock. Didn't realise I was supposed to stay up till 12 o'clock, till the final hours of deadline. but no, I'm not to blame. Something else was the reason that it fell down. But at the time Jim was ringing me, he was ringing me to tell me that I needed to fill out some paperwork, because it looked like Dara was going to go to Scotland. But
we kind of, it's been a theme of this, and we've just been chatting about young players there, like Paul Fennessy had a piece up over the weekend, which is very handy for people just as a reference point, even just to look at, of like 23 players under the age of 23 to look out for. But even what you were saying there, like Ben McCormick isn't on it, and it's interesting because it's in, even look at some of the players there, some of them are on the way up, some of them have been around the league already for a couple of years, and you're kind of thinking, well, where can they go? I don't know, Gav, for you, you've already mentioned what you call it, Romeo. Anybody else on that list? I've mentioned Darragh Burns and stuff earlier, and he's another one who's gone away and come back. Anybody else on that list, or in terms of players emerging? Shane has kind of said he wants to be entertained this year. He wants to see the stars emerge. So absolutely no pressure on the young fellas there.
No real surprise about him, but obviously can't wait to see what Mason Milia does this year, as obviously signed a new contract with Pats.
Say Pats number 9.
Right, interesting. Okay, I didn't know that. So I'm interested to see how he goes. James McManus had a great start to last season. I think he tailed off a little bit, but again, that goes back to your point of inconsistency of youth, and obviously Bohemians' performances dipped as the season went on as well. Obviously Akechukwu in the first division, we might see a bit of Jaden Uma at Cork City, but as Fennell points out, I think he's bound for Benfica as soon as he turns 16. Amazing from this list to see that Adam O'Reilly is still 22. He seems to have been around forever. Yeah. Similar with Cameron Ledge, which is only 22 as well. So yeah, they're probably the main ones. And even Darragh Burns is still only 21. You know, remember how exciting he was before he went to England. It didn't work out at all, but he could be a really great signing for Shamrock Rovers. And Conan Noonan, I have to say, obviously interesting comments after the game, really showering with praise from Stephen Bradley. And that pass for Trevor Clark's first goal on Friday in the President's Cup was just top notch, you know. So you know, he's got obviously real technical quality as a midfielder, so it'll be interesting to see how he develops as the season goes on. The big disappointment from a personal point of view, Rovers are obviously happy enough with the move, but the fact that Naj Razi is gone already, we thought maybe we get this season out of him before he moved, maybe even two seasons before he moved to the UK, but has gone to Como instantly. He's a super exciting player. I think Shane was telling us about him from last season when he was about 14 and tearing it up against your first team squad. Would have been great to see a bit of him, but obviously he's decided that the Como move is best for him.
And then on the opposite spectrum, Shane, you kind of touched on it there, but then who are some of the established figures then in the league? Who are you looking at in terms of maybe thinking, do you know what, there's still more to come, or possibly, I know you've referenced Jack Bourne there, and obviously the injuries have been a part for that over the last few months. He should be back in contention in the next few weeks, hopefully for Rovers. But who is it then in terms of could actually step up and even emerge even more as a slightly older player or a more established League of Ireland player?
Yeah, well, look, again, maybe it's because it probably is because I'm coloured with having worked with them, but like I don't think any of the Dundalk boys who moved to Derry really fully delivered on what they were capable of. Like, you know, I almost nearly always present them as a package, right? But Patrick McElhenney and Michael Duffy, because they're like Bill and Ben, they don't go anywhere without each other. They're like, for me, those two, you know, why did Derry not go and win a league in an off-season for Rovers last year? It's because those two, for me, didn't hit the heights that they're absolutely capable of. I think if the two of those had the seasons that is within their capabilities based on their ability, I think it could have been a very, very different scenario. And they need to step up now. They need to step up. They've got Hoobs in front of them. They know if they create the chances that the opportunities will be taken. I think they're two major ones for me that just, it was a very meh season for the two. Like, you know what I mean? They weren't bad. I'm sure nobody would ever say that they played poorly. They didn't play poorly, but, you know, meh. There was not a whole lot to us, not a whole lot to write home about. And I mean, they're outrageously gifted players, the two of them. Outrageously talented. So I would like to see the two of them really, really step up. I touched on it earlier, the Jake Mulroney one. Not that Jake is old or anything, but, you know, I mean, this is a guy that I heard so much about. Dan Cleary used to absolutely rave about him as well. And I just expected him to come and be, and be in the top three players in the league last year. And he showed he showed reasons why people would have that belief about him, I suppose, in flashes. But there were, you know, he wasn't even a nailed on guaranteed starter for them, really, so he wasn't. And I think if Pats are to really go and challenge, they need him to step up in a major, major way. And then, look, the last name I'd throw out is, you've touched on it again already, is Aaron McAdiff. I mean, you know, I think we maybe played certain, we might have forgotten just how good he was. He was outrageous before he left. Outstanding. And he's just an incredible addition to their setup. Yeah. I'd be fearful of the impact that he could have there, to be honest. Which, from somebody who wants an open title race, I'm fearful that he could be the kind of player that makes it a little bit too easy for Rovers.
So Shane, we joked at the start about a bit of a different week for you as well, but obviously, if things had been differently, you would have been looking, building your team for the fourth division with Cove. Have you still kept an eye on it? It's kind of assessed where things are at. It kind of looks as if Cork should be coming back up.
Yeah, I would certainly have them favourites. I don't know if I'd have them as heavy favourites as the bookmakers have them. They're 1-2 on. I don't know if I'd be that nailed on with them, but yeah, they are certainly favourites. They are, no doubt about it. You know, in the likes of a Greg Bulger, another Dundalk man in Sean Murray. I mean, you know, they've signed quite a few players that are absolutely Premier Division quality, and players who you would expect to you know, still be absolute mainstays if they were a Premier Division side. Obviously, they brought in Jack from ourselves, who again is another one who I think is Premier Division quality. So yeah, you can 100% see why they're favourites, and anything less than winning the league will undoubtedly be a major disappointment there, let's be honest. Not to heap too much pressure on Tim from the off, but that is the reality. He'll absolutely know that himself. But I do think there's a couple of teams capable of giving him a fair fist of it. Even when you get towards the end of a season, I suppose, lads, you're starting to eye up, right, who are the players that could potentially be available, who are the players that I will go after in the off season. And bear in mind, when it got to the end of the season, you know, it was probably 50-50 in my head as to whether I still would be the Cove manager or not for that. So I was making those plans. Right. And two players who were absolutely top of my list were Christian McGorson, who had been centre forward at Longford. And Shane Griffin, who I felt might become surplus to requirements at Waterford, even though he's ridiculously talented fella. So they would have been two at the absolute top of my shopping list. Both have ended up at Bray Wanderers. So that's a serious coup by Ian Ryan, in my opinion, there. And I would give them a hell of a chance. And then Wexford, you know, two teams who were probably disappointed with their season last year. Bray missed out in the playoffs altogether. Wexford just about scraped in and then went out straight away to us in the playoff semi-final. I do think Wexford will make a hell of a better fist of it this year as well. I suppose initially I was looking at them going, okay, they're making some really, really good signings, but I think the good signings are going to be offset by the loss of Aaron Dobbs, because that, I had been led to believe, was all but a foregone conclusion. And then there was a change in circumstances for Aaron Dobbs. I think it came down to his college course and how much time he thought he was going to be allowed, maybe, you know, do more of it online and less of it in person and all that kind of stuff. That all changed, which meant he re-signed. He would be, for me, in the top five players in the first division last year. And now all of a sudden I'm looking and going, Jesus, they do look really strong. They look really, really good now that they, with the additions plus the retention of him. So there are two that I would expect to push. And then the one thing that I keep thinking back to is the fact that UCD were rock bottom in the Premier Division, and yet when we played them in the FAI Cup, they were a million times ahead of anything that we had played in the first division that year. We couldn't get near them. They absolutely dominated the ball. Just everything I tried. We got a bit of a better handle on them in the second half. But I remember in the first half, we got a lesson like we hadn't got all season long. Now, again, they've lost a couple. You know, Jack Keeney, I suppose, been the standout one. Evan Assam was kind of injured up most of last season anyway, so that's not as big of a loss. But UCD always managed to find replacements. They always find these wonder kids who just step in and replace it. So I would fully expect them to be right in the picture.
Right, well, you've given us a fair little kind of overview of what to maybe expect, or what ways might not be so straightforward for Cork. So, Gav, I'm going to ask you, first of all, to put your neck on the line. Not so much, well, it is putting your neck on the line. Who's going to actually win the Premier Division?
Here's an interesting and original prediction. I think Shamrock Rovers will win the Premier Division for the fifth season in a row. I've got Derry second and Pats third, which is the exact same as last season.
But I'm hearing though that some of the clubs are pitching together in the Premier to try and get Rovers to sign Harry Kane, just so that won't happen.
Leave Harry alone.
Oh, do you know what? I'm not going to lie, Shane. I was so tempted at the very start to just throw that in and just get you pissed off really early. But I thought you might still be kind of just as well. Spurs got that late winner at the weekend. Otherwise,
the one I saw. Did you see that? Actually, I know we're gone way off point here, but did you see that somebody's record has to come to an end? Harry Kane has never won a league title. Kingsley Coman has never not won the league title. So yeah, one of those two records have to come to an end.
Okay.
Anyway, back to the main talking point, David. Go on.
Neither of those players will end up at Shamrock Rovers. We can come back, segue nicely back into that. But yeah, like you say, that's who you're fancying, Gav.
I think Rovers. Yeah, I just think that the squad is like they've retained even the lone players from last season. They've added so much. They've kept Byrne and Gaffney, which is something we hadn't really discussed, and that's quite important for them as well. Yeah. So I don't know. I can't. I just think they're too good. I've got too much experience of winning, and I think the squad's too strong. Could be wrong, obviously, but no, I fancy them. I'll put Derry second and Pats third again. But if it's any consolation for Derry and Pats fans, I'm usually wrong.
What about yourself, Shane?
Well, this is going to lead to a heated debate because I have Rovers 1, Derry 2, Pats 3.
Can anyone break into that top 3? I think we're all, I'll be honest on the same, I think Rovers will win it. I don't think they'll have, as you've kind of said it there, they've brought back a couple of players, like say McAniff, that are Burns coming in. I don't think they're going to have that same struggle. And also, when they didn't touch on this, and Bradley referenced it, the players had nearly 2 months off this year. You had seven weeks off after last season. Like the heading into last season, then he had 3 weeks. So Bradley was saying just how the fixtures come, that's going to be a difference for him. Obviously, when the European games come around, we can discuss that more when those fixtures come closer. But like, I think that's why I think as well Rovers will win it, is because I don't think they're going to be maybe as worn down as they were, or maybe needing having those struggles. I think that's why they'll win it, because I think they still proved they were the best team last year, even with those problems. They strengthened, and I don't think the other teams have done enough to be able to overhaul them. And even when I say do enough for Pats, that would have actually been keeping hold of a few players rather than signing players.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. There's the, can either the two teams catch Rovers? And I think the problem for them is, as you've said, I think the problem is going to be the addition of Aaron McAniff, Jack Byrne potentially been fit, you know, Ferrugia potentially been fit, Clark for a full season, fully fit. Like, I just see vast improvement in Rovers. I think both Derry and Pats will improve. Pats have a little bit of a question mark over. I still don't think they've replaced Curtis. I'd be a little bit fearful for them in that area of the field.
Because Aaron Bulger played right back on Friday night.
Is Ryan McLaughlin fit?
He was injured. He picked up an injury in the last game, yeah.
Okay, that I suppose could fill that role. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that watching the game the other night. I do think they'll both improve, but I just think Rovers will possibly improve even more. And then in terms of, can anybody break into the three? Like, I don't know. I don't, who's the common team? Shells are probably the common team, but this time last year, we were talking about five teams.
We haven't even mentioned Damien Duff yet. How the fuck? We're an hour into this podcast. We're an hour into the podcast in the League of Ireland season, and we have not mentioned Damien Duff.
Listen, he'll get enough. He'll be the main talking point for most of the season for us. Don't worry, he'll get enough. But I mean, this time last year, we would have been talking about Bowes and Dundalk, both, you know, expecting to qualify for Europe. And like, if anything, in terms of closing in on the other three, they've probably gone backwards, you know. So it's hard to see, for me, it's hard to see anything been outside that being the top three.
It's so hard to know then who's going to get that fourth European spot. Like, Shell's got it last year. obviously things have not exactly worked out as envisaged under the Turkish ownership, in the sense that they took charge for about 5 minutes, and obviously the budget is vastly diminished this year compared to last year. But they still managed to get one of the Hull lads back on loan. So
they got Jarvis back, didn't they?
There hasn't been a total falling out. And added some really kind of solid league experience in Ward, and especially Sean Gannon, maybe kind of past their peaks now. But like, Duff will probably get a tune out of them. It'll be interesting. Liam Burt's got a shells, hasn't he? I'm doing that off the top of my head. So it's going to be really interesting to see if Duff can get out of him what Rovers didn't last season. Like, one of the reasons Rovers kind of struggled last year was that he was a major disappointment. When they didn't have Faruja, they really lacked pace in wide areas. They've obviously addressed that with bringing in Dara Burns and happy to let Burt go. So that's going to be the interesting one. Like, I would see it as a major success of a season if Shells could finish fourth again. But I don't know as to what they're fending off, because Bowes and Dundalk are the two prime competitors for that spot. And they're the two around which I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, obviously Dundalk left their recruitment very late because everything got delayed with the takeover and all that's going on behind the scenes. So there's a real element of the unknown around then. And Bowes recruitment is, you know, big question marks as well. Obviously they've signed from Eastern Europe, it's the Estonian international striker who they've brought in, Sten Reinkort from Flora Tallinn. Like, he's got to work out for them. I mean, because Afolabi's gone, and Afolabi was crucial, especially that great winning run at the start of last season, which basically propped up the entire league campaign. Afolabi was vital to that. So can they replace them? And I just kind of worry that things might turn a bit sour at Daily Event very quickly. No one's really been too blown away by their recruitment so far. There's not a huge amount of credit in the bank there, despite making the cup final last season, just because the Dublin Derby results have been so poor, and also their league form tailed off so badly toward the end of the season. So that's really interesting. And then I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm surprised to hear what Shane says, that Galway are fancied to do so well on their season back. Could they end up kind of pushing for European spots? Because I do wonder if the standard there will be a little bit lower. The points total needed for it might be a bit lower than it has the last few seasons.
We were asked to do who's going to get relegated, but I'm conscious of the fact that I have to actually speak to these people as the season goes on. And so will Gavin, Shane. I'll probably hit the bump. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just skip that. So, Shane, who's the superstar in the making then? I want Neil Faruja to stay fit. He looked so good in the first 45 minutes the other night. We're talking about fellas of who can, what, where their ceiling's at. I think he is someone who, all God willing, everything going well for him, could go to a different level.
I fully endorse your opinion there, David, to be honest. Look, he's, you know, just, yeah, touch wood, an injury free run. Like, it would be fantastic, because he's outstanding. He's absolutely outstanding, and you'd love to see what he can achieve this year. Is there another one that I'd pull out? Probably not to be heaping too much, but it is probably Mason Melia. Like, you know, it's just so exciting. It's just ridiculous, the level of confidence that he possesses, and he's right with that much ability. He's absolutely right. He is one who, like, literally, he could literally be the best player in the division this year at that age, which would just be ridiculous, be absolutely ridiculous. He's probably the one that I'd roll out there alongside your own prediction of Faruja.
Right, and then to finish with, just, we're going to do a final segment for 45 minutes on Damien Duff, just because.
We should, by the way, just because we haven't mentioned Drogheda at all here. I don't think he's going to be the star of the league or anything, but I am very interested to see how Franz Perrault does. So this kind of has to work out for Drogheda, though, doesn't it? I mean, given the standard of the league, given how, you know, like, the relegation battle is so interesting, it seems like it's with Waterford and Galway coming up, it'll be a lot tougher to stay up this season than it was last season, should we say. Obviously, Freddie Draper has left. So he was so important for them last year. Perrault, you saw him in the first division, Shane. Like, are there question marks as to whether he can make the step up, or is it a foregone conclusion for you?
Sure, look, until you make the step up, there is question marks. But my God, what a handful. Jeez, it's hard to even think what you compare him to. It really, really is. Like, he's built far more like, I don't know, a I'm trying to think what, even what sport you'd compare him to. Kind of Mike Tyson, like, is kind of what I think of when I think of the shape of him. So strong. His ability to hold players off and roll players. Oh, look, he was frightening, absolutely frightening in our division. And I think he's going to cause centre halves serious problems up there. Maybe they'll be cuter and they'll be able for him. But I thought one of the questions that David might throw would be, you know, what team do we think can most overachieve? And for me, it is Drogheda, because the bookmakers have Drogheda to finish last, and I honestly don't think Drogheda will be in the bottom two. I think Kev will be able to work his wonders yet again. I think part of that will be Franz Perrott. I think he's just so different. He is so different that it is definitely going to take defenders a while to figure out how to fucking handle him. And I think with so many question marks over so-called bigger teams like your Sligo's, Dundalk, Waterford, all these kinds of teams, I can see Dundalk finding two teams to, or Drogheda finding two teams to finish ahead of.
Who is going to finish? So obviously David has laid a very good rationale as to why neither he nor I want to predict anyone to go down. I was going to say Drogheda, unfortunately, but I say Drogheda earlier, and sure, who knows? Like, I mean, they always prove me wrong. So
they should.
I'd be delighted.
They should do. All things being equal, they should.
But who do you think will then?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think Sligo could find it a hard season.
Fuck yes, Sligo. Yeah. Got a bit Sligo. I think it'll be rough for Sligo. I do think so, yeah.
I think they could find it a tough season. If I had to stick my neck out on one, it would possibly be them.
There we go. I'm doing Sligo Vos on Friday, so there.
Is that your game on Friday, is it?
Sligo Vos? That's my game on Friday. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I should have got you going on them, actually, just to slaughter the two of them. Just to throw them in. That would be a good fun. But in fairness, Shane, like, you've referenced now the League of Ireland's Mike Tyson. We have chewed the ears off the listeners for the last hour.
Brilliant.
But you very rarely make demands. Normally, it's just like, be nice to Harry Kane or whatever it is. But you were absolutely adamant. You're like, I want to talk about the player pathway plan that Mark Cannon is going to be delivering and the alignment of the football calendars in Irish football.
Yeah. Now, I've slightly softened my bullish nature even since I sent that text, in that I read a bit of an update from Dan yesterday, where he was saying that Canham's proposal around the year may not just be as blunt as we are switching schoolboy and junior football to summer. That apparently it's going to be, I think the word Dan used was more nuanced than that. I'm still intrigued as to what that can be. How we're either changing the season or we're not changing the season. I don't really understand.
Nuanced is just a posh way of saying confusing.
yeah, maybe so. But look, I suppose just for listeners, I'm sure they're aware, basically the bits that were, I don't know, were they leaked out, or was it made available, or how some of Hannum's plan has become available before the player pathway meetings. But one of the headlines from it was that he was looking for an alignment of all football in the country alongside the League of Ireland schedule. Now, I saw this roundly being applauded, I think, in most of the reaction that I saw. I suppose maybe the people who were saying that was a good idea were from certain parts of the country. I can tell you from where I am, it would be an absolute disaster. An absolute unmitigated disaster.
Fuck.
I'm telling you now. It would, my own local club would be gone in the morning, and so many more clubs like it.
Why?
Literally, because hold on. So my young fella's under 9 soccer match is on the same day at the same time as my young fella's under 9 hurling or Gaelic football match. Like, in rural areas, there's only one winner there, lads. The GA wins every time in rural areas. How explain to me how this would, like, if their under 9 soccer match is on at the same time as their under 9 hurling match on the same day, what happens?
Do you play them both?
you'd be fairly sure they're probably both going to be down for 11 o'clock.
But all, like, if the under 9 soccer match is in November and December to avoid clashing with Gaelic football, it's also clashing with the worst of the weather, and the pitch will be unplayable. Is that not a huge problem addresses?
Down our way anyway, Gav, almost everybody at this stage has an Astra. Vast majority of teams have an Astra.
I was going to just say, this is just another element of, and it goes hand in hand with the infrastructure plan you see in other countries, where this is just where more facilities are needed. And just on a different basis than it's not, but like, again, as someone who still plays in kind of amateur football in the UCFL, like, we've had the same problem over the last couple of months, where we've had one game maybe since after Christmas, just because the pitches have been brutal. And listen, it doesn't affect us as much because obviously we're adults or whatever. It's worse for kids in terms of their development as footballers. But that's where you do. I would be of the opinion that I think an alignment should work, but also this is where you need an improvement in facilities as well.
But the alignment thing, does the alignment thing not make perfect sense? Like, I mean, we're as far as I'm led to believe, we're a total outlier in Europe to have the professional game here running during the summer and the underage and amateur game running around the winter. Like, maybe surely it makes sense to align everything, and obviously that helps to build in the pyramid, like a third tier pyramid at senior level, where amateur clubs and potentially reserve clubs from League of Ireland size. Like, does this not all make sense? And would it not also have a symbolic effect that, you know, the big fucking problem in Irish football is that everything is seen as, all these constituencies are seen as separate and kind of battling each other and like tearing themselves apart, basically, where a unified game would be a lot more successful. Like, would this not all go a long way to kind of fusing a lot of the divides?
I'm going to ask you as well, Shane, on that, just a point on this. Like, I don't think it's a case of saying, right, well, all the games run at the exact same day and at the exact same time. Like, as someone who's involved in the grassroots of GA and also who understands it more in football as well, like, could you just have different days? Is that too simplistic to say, right, after a certain time on a certain day is only for soccer and for Gaelic and hurling on another day and after another time when it's still bright? Would that not still make sense?
I suppose they're not exactly two associations known for working particularly hand in hand with each other for a start. Look, I completely admit I am purely looking at this through our situation where I am, but I know that would apply to Laois, Carlow, Kilkenny, Wexford, you know, Offaly, Westmeath.
Longford, I throw Longford in, yeah, I think that's fair.
Longford, like, in all of those areas. Like, what, so the status quo, what I am used to is the fact, because I would look after Connor's under 9 hurling team and I would look after Connor's under 9 soccer team. And what I am used to is that from September till about March, we're out every Saturday playing soccer. And from March until September, we're out every weekend playing hurling or Gaelic football. The fact that those two things are now going to be set to be during the same period, I get all the other pluses, but just somebody explain to me how this is going to work for all of the, you know, 7 to 13, 11, 13-year-olds in all of those counties. Are they being told at 7 years of age now, you've got to choose? You have to choose one or the other. That's it. And I'm telling you, vast majority of the time, you know, I know I'm employed by one of those associations, but there's probably going to be one winner in the vast majority of cases.
But well, they definitely have to choose. I mean, they're not professional at under 7, under 8, and under 9.
No, but both games, like every game that Connor plays is 11 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Do you know, every game that they play is 11 o'clock on a Saturday. I don't know. So what are we looking for them to do? Are we looking for them to play one at 11 o'clock and then immediately dart to the next one and be there for 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock for them to play their second match of the day? I mean, that's far from ideal either, I would have thought.
Yeah. Sorry, it sounds like then your idea, if we're going to align, you'd be more in favour of bringing the League of Ireland back to a winter season, where again, the facilities just aren't good enough to facilitate.
No, I'm not. I get that. I get that can't happen. Let's be honest. That can't happen in my opinion. So it can't. Look, I'm not saying I have a solution. This is in my, like, I just, every single talented soccer player we have in our club is also a talented hurler or Gaelic footballer. Every single one of them. And 9 times out of 10, I know if those two things are going to start clashing, I know that it's hurling and Gaelic football they're going to choose. Which means that, forget about the Shane Longs of the world. Forget about the Kevin Doyles of the world. They're gone, lads. They're gone. Because if the two things are clashing and you've got to choose one over the other, they will, like Shane Long would admit, Kevin Doyle would admit, they would absolutely, Seamus Coleman, I would say there's a hell of a chance that at 7, 8 years of age, Seamus Coleman had to choose. I'd say there's a hell of a chance. He would, even if it's nearly, some of it comes from the parents almost, I'd say there's a hell of a chance Seamus Coleman's dad would have been saying, well, listen, you know, no, it's Gaelic football is our big thing up here. That's what we're going with.
But just the one point I would have on this, and I don't know, and maybe this is something, because I think Mark Hannum is due to speak about this at some point this month. An actual date still hasn't actually been set. Obviously, the whole manager situation and all that's been happening over the last little while, this was supposed to be laid out in January. And it is something then that in February, later on this month, that we'll discuss. But I kind of wonder then, well, is it possible for the FAI and the GEA to be coming together on this and actually working out a plan and doing something? I would find that very difficult because two associations who have different priorities. And like what you're saying there, if the FAI think, well, do you know what? Right, and honestly, this might sound bad, we're going to lose out on certain players, and that's not great. It's not ideal, but this is what, for the greater good, over a longer period of time, for where Irish football is going to have to be at, that this needs to be done. I don't know, like, is that something
possibly, and again, I'm coming from a particular viewpoint here, I completely admit that, but I'm just so multi-sport orientated. I absolutely love kids being involved in multi-sports for as long as they possibly can, and we're making that impossible with this shift. We're making that impossible.
Yeah. Part of me then thinks we're not kind of losing out then on players, on soccer players then as well, because they have to play in the winter and there could be some lads who it just suits them better than not because the weather is crap, loads of matches are getting cancelled, they lose interest. You could be losing out on people as well that way, is it? You know what I mean? It's no harm. I don't think there'd be any harm even if it was like a trial thing where they say, right, you know what, this is something new for Irish sport in terms of where we're at with the calendar. This is where we're going to trial this for a while. And we're going to actually assess and see what the fallout numbers are. You don't have to commit to it and say, no matter what, this is 100% right. Just trial it if it's something different in terms of, and seeing what you're saying there about how can clubs and how can actually associations then kind of work around it. Will that be possible? If it's an absolute shit show after a year or 2 years of doing it, you can maybe then you just have to revert and accept it. But I don't think there's any harm.
I don't think you can trial it. If you're going to do it, like the FAI, I have to be absolutely convinced that it's the right thing to do. And if you're going to do it, you have to bring everyone along with you. And if you're already kind of half apologizing for yourself by saying, let's trial it on a couple of years basis, or let's try it for a few years. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, you're already given some parts of the game an option to opt out of it, to be honest, because they're thinking, look, how do they really believe in this, you know? So I don't see how, you know, you could actually get a trial basis.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, but I'm more so coming from the point of view of almost going against of, it seems like the natural thing would be, or the thing that would actually see GAA people rally against this is the FAI doing that by saying, this is where we're going, no matter what, this is what we're doing, blah, 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 without exception. And not that you have to defer to it, but actually holding your hands and saying, you know what, this is what we do, what we feel is right, but we're also aware and conscious of the fact that this is totally new for what Irish young people in sport are used to and what you're used to. So we feel this is exactly where it's going and where we're going to do it, but we're not, I don't know, imposing it harshly. Does that make sense? I think you have to, if you're going to do it, there's a way of, you have to make sure of hands across the water and all the rest of it and building bridges with it, of doing it that way. Do you know what I mean? Where you actually say, well, you know, accept that what you're asking is a huge shift and hold your hands up to that. But while also saying, but we need to, this is what we need to do. We need to try this.
Yeah, and look, again, like, I understand how this will work for huge areas of the country. But there are, other areas of the country, mine being one, that it's just, I can't wrap my head around how, I just think it's going to literally see, like, I think the amount of school by clubs will have overnight if this is brought in, because the vast majority of them will, you know, and listen, this roadshow, maybe he's going to, as I said, Dan hinted at it yesterday, maybe this roadshow is going to explain, you know, maybe I'm pressing the nuclear button here, whereas it's not going to be quite as nuclear. Now, I'll throw out another thing. Like, I'm speaking here as somebody who feels like soccer in the Midlands is getting screwed over a little bit here if this was to be brought in. It also doesn't help that this FAI roadshow, where it has been brought around the country, seems to be going everywhere except the fucking Midlands. Like, there's one in Dublin, there's one in Dublin, there's one in Cork, there's one in Galway, and there's one in Donegal.
Yeah.
So, well, if you're from Laois, Offaly, Carlow, Kilkenny,
Longford,
you know, Longford, you're going to be in your car for a fair length of time.
This is a wider thing, Shane. The Midlands are ignored by everyone, not just the FAI. I mean, we're ignored by the whole. I mean, I've had to pretend I'm from Dublin.
Are you? But what's your tagline though from Bord Fáilte? Are you part? You're not part of the Wild Atlantic Way or the Ancient East? What are you? What's your? Have you even got a tagline? You haven't even got a tagline.
I think Ireland's Ancient East or something. Which is absolutely bullshit.
I think I might have mentioned this one to you before, Gav. We were back when I was managing Wexford, and we used to play on a Friday night. There was only two teams playing on a Saturday, Longford and Cove. So I used to end up heading to one of those two venues all the time. And we'd gone to Cove a few times, and Roisin had come with me. And I suggested one night, I'm going up to Longford tomorrow night. I said, to watch a match up there. Do you fancy coming up there? So Roisin Googled Longford, and it said that Longford was famous for its low-lying hills. Like, what? You don't even have mountains, you just have low-lying hills.
The lesser known low-lying well, it's obviously fields, isn't it? Long way fields, I never would.
We've got a centre parks now. That's the main thing.
True. Which actually she is dead set on getting to, actually, now that I think about it. Yeah, so you've won this argument long term, Gav.
Right. But that definitely concludes this episode of the Football Family when we've finished on centre parks discussing the League of Ireland. Thanks very much, lads. I enjoyed that chat.
Cheers. Happy new season, everybody.
Great stuff.
Yeah, have a good one. Take care. And I don't know if I'm being foolish. Don't know if